And of course, with our special guest, Walter Cruttenden, and we're going to take phone calls with him next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Walter Cruttenden is with us, of course, in his work, Lost Star of Myth and Time. This is exciting, Walter.
George, we're having fun.
I mean, just developing this, thinking about it. How many scientists believe in the binary system?
Well, I'd say, 10, 15 years ago, people would just throw it out offhand. They would say, gee, if there was one, we'd know it by now. But it's interesting, when you start finding all these dwarf planets and you need a reason for their particular orbits, that more and more scientists are coming around. And it's not that they're all saying it's got to be a companion star, but they're saying it has to be a mass. Now they're saying it has to be a bigger mass, and now some of them are saying it has to be two big masses. So you can see we're moving in the direction of a binary star. I think it'll be widely accepted probably in 10 or 20 years.
When Velikovsky wrote his book, Wars in Collision, Worlds in Collision, did he factor in some of this?
You know, he's a fascinating author. He read a lot of myth and folklore, and I think that he interpreted some of it, very, very matter-of-factly or materially, when I think some of it must have been metaphorical. But I kind of applaud him for kind of, I feel like him in some ways, in that when you take a position,
he was gutsy.
A lot of people sort of come at you, and that's what he did.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Alex is in Boise, Idaho, on the wildcard line. Alex, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question, and a comment, I guess. My question is how does the binary system affect the world grid, as in the energies that travel through the ley lines of the Earth? And my comment would be that if you were an alien race outside of the world, looking at us down right now in our warlike state, would you really want, like, say that the alien race was a person and you were another person, would you want to really meet that angry, warlike person?
I wouldn't.
And I will take the answer to my question on how the binary star system that we could be living in affects the world grid off the air. Thank you very much.
How does it affect the grid? Probably not at all, Walter, does it?
Oh, I think it does in a great way.
Really? Explain.
This builds on the work of Dr. Valerie Hunt at UCLA, the physiologist who showed that, if you put people in a Faraday cage, the new room, they called it there, and separate them from the natural electromagnetic atmosphere in which we live, people would get very depressed. And when you're in other types of environments, like negative ion-enriched environments, around waterfalls and surf and things like that, people are naturally happier. Same thing, I believe, is going on. So, this cycle exists. We have free will, but the environment is totally different between a high age and a low age. And the environment is different because it's affecting the subtle energies of the Earth. And, we don't know a lot about ley lines, at least, officially. But it seems to be a topic that was of great interest to ancient cultures. And I loved Alex's second question, too. If you were an alien and you kind of knew about these yugas, would you really want to visit a place like Earth at a low age like this? And I would imagine not, unless you're coming here to do experiments or something like that.
I wouldn't want to visit us, would you? Next up, let's go to Buffalo, New York. Brian's with us. Brian, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. I got to take it down to some fundamental level here, and I want to talk a little bit about heliocentric versus the geocentric definitions or models of the universe. And let me finish by saying that everything reacts upon something else. So, you know, the heliocentric might not have been as elegant as the, I'm sorry, the geocentric might not have been as elegant as the heliocentric. You know, from Ptolemy to Copernicus to Galileo. However, the theory of gravity certainly plays a part here, where every speck of sand has some reaction upon, let's say, a mass as large as the sun. So to say that one thing is the center of the universe or the solar system may seem more elegant, it's certainly simpler, but more simple, is that that's where I think that Einstein was going with the theory of relativity. If you're out in space and there's nothing to relate to, and you are going as fast as you know, you got the foot to the pedal, you have no concept of how fast you're going. And it really comes down to relativity.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah,
we're
here.
I'm here, Brian.
No, I hope I'm not taking you off topic. But it really, to me, and I do understand certainly the theory of gravity and the elegance of that and all of it, but you can describe things in other ways. You know, there's the infinite and the definite, and those things have, you know, they've got their own kind of languages that describe things. Now, so we're describing physics here, and there's many ways to describe the universe. Certainly, I had problems with the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, and then now they've come out with string theory, and they're talking about how you know, electrons can go from orbital to orbital to stages without instantaneously, and people have done experiments where they can communicate across vast distances instantaneously.
Well, and I think the point, Walter, here too is how much can science continue to come up with these new concepts? I think it's indefinite.
I would agree with you, George. I think as our understanding grows, so does our way we describe things. And so I like Brian's point of view. It's not so much that one is wrong versus another, but that the heliocentric system was a way to describe it, and still can be from a certain point of view. And then, or geocentric, and then we're on to heliocentric. Pretty soon it'll probably be binary centric. Then it might be local stellar mass centric, and then maybe galactic centric. As our understanding grows, I think our terminology will change.
Did the ancients know much of this? Did they know of a binary star system?
You know, the myth and folklore makes a lot of references to cycles and higher ages, and there's some whispers of it being caused by another star. And you mentioned some of those recently about the Shinto pointing to a star and the ancient Egyptians pointing to the star. Some of the Mesopotamians talked about another star. But unfortunately, it's all sort of cloaked in this very ancient language of myth and folklore, so it's not considered scientific.
Joel is in Cleveland, Ohio. Hello, Joel. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just would be basically sort of touched on it with the last question, but I wanted to know, how would these ancient civilizations have discovered this without the technology that we have today? How would they have come up with that?
Well, themselves? If the yugas are valid, that means that we have a higher consciousness in ancient times. And the Greeks actually talked about this quite a bit. They broke this cycle of the ages into four periods, an Iron Age, a Bronze Age, Silver Age, and Golden Age. Indians had a similar breakdown, but they called it Yugas. Another word for the Iron Age is the Age of Man. Another age word for the others is the Age of the Hero, and the Age of the Demigods, and then the highest age is the Age of the Gods. And they kind of made references to, in the higher ages, man knows things by through intuition and telepathy, clairvoyance, enlightenment is developed to a high degree versus our thinking about them right now with this evolutionary strict linear interpretation is that, oh, they must be very primitive, therefore they couldn't have known about stellar systems. And I think just the opposite is true.
Walter, with the binary star system probably in existence, when will science officially tell us it's there?
Well, we're getting more and more smoking guns. And I think the biggest smoking gun recently is the discovery of Biden. That's this dwarf that's in a plane, very similar to Sedna. It has an aphelion, very similar to Sedna. The two of them sandwich Pluto. They're just about 15 degrees apart between all three of them. They're all pointing in the direction of Sirius. I think, when you look at a couple other dwarf stars that are doing very similar things, dwarf planets, the evidence is we're getting enough pieces of data to where we can put together a model to show that it probably is a very large mass at a great distance. And John, and one more thing, George. This is John Deering again. Those two dwarf planets, Sedna and Triton, are in interesting resonances with a 24,000-year period. They're in harmonics of it. Triton would be six.
Almost like a sunspot cycle.
Well, think of it this way. Like notes almost on a scale. You know, in mechanics, you have one gear turning at one revolution a minute, another turning at five revolutions a minute. It's that type of relationship. Biden completes six orbits every 24,000 years, and Sedna completes two orbits every 24,000 years.
Two orbits, that's it?
Yes. Very slow period. What this means, though, is that for two objects that far apart to get into a orbital resonance, as we call it, meaning they have a discrete fixed number of orbits that exactly match this 24,000-year period Walter is talking about. That means there is a commanding gravitational presence for mass, distant, far enough away that it is not simply that they happen to graze near a planet that's out there. This is something far away, yet very imposing order. These objects can't match its orbit perfectly because they each have their own initial momentum and kinetic energy and their original conditions, so they're not going to be in a perfect 24,000-year one-to-one orbit, but they do the best they can so that when they're in our closest approach phases with Sirius, or binary companion.
Okay, and John, you're breaking up, so let's go back to Walter, right, if we can. And Walter...
Yeah.
Where's that definitive proof that you know that there's a binary star system in our solar system?
It's a combination of things. One, it's the best way to explain the phenomena that we call precession. We've put together models of it. The current precession theory uses 4,000 inputs to try to predict the changing rate of precession. With a binary model, we only need six inputs, and we're 43 times more accurate in predicting the rate of change of precession every year over the last few hundred years. It's the dwarf planet periodicities that John was making a reference to, the resonances, and also the plane of the orbits. It's all these things And, you know, if you study it, it seems as obvious as can be. And it's just people, just enough people aren't looking at it yet. And I think it'll happen very soon.
Next up, we go to Rachel in North Carolina, east of the Rockies. Hi, Rachel. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you doing?
We're good. Thanks.
Good. This is Rachel with White Buffalo Newsletter. I just wanted to share, you were talking earlier, why would some extraterrestrials want to bother to visit the planet Earth? That was funny. But I just wanted to share that the thought that crossed my mind about it was, to make a long story short, was The Day the Earth Stood Still. That movie made the new version, and the one made in 1951.
51 with Michael Rennie was a classic.
Yeah, right. That's why I think, you know, because of their authority over the planet. And I guess it isn't too nice a place anymore sometimes.
Well, it's
anyway,
it's
that's
a gorgeous
thought that crossed
place.
My mind. That's why they would like to visit. Well, anyway, you take care.
Okay, thanks for calling. Appreciate you being part of the program. Couple minutes to the break, Walter, then we'll come back with some final phone calls here. You also take, you know, an approach of mental powers. Explain that. How do you mix that with what you do?
Well, the myth and folklore of many cultures talk about a pre-Babel age, make reference to, you know, when mankind can commune with nature and understand the animals and things like this. And the saints and sages of India today will say the same thing, that in the future mankind will regain this ability. And you know, again, I find the binary motion is sort of a causal effect that causes these huge environmental changes on the planet. And there's certain points in time when the planet is sort of more attenuated. It's more energetic, more alive. And that, I believe that plays into why telepathic forces are stronger at one point in time versus another.
Walter's websites, of course, are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Walter, can people email you through your sites?
Yeah, they can send an email to Walter at thebinaryresearchinstitute.org, or an easier one is just Walter at acorns.com.
Acorns?
Acorns, plural.
Okay, you got it. Walter, stay with us. We're going to roll right back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll take some final phone calls with you. Those of you on hold, just hold your place in line, and we'll get right to you. Plus, we have a surprise mystery guest who wants to talk with Walter, so stand by. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, the first hour, we'll be talking, of course, with Jimmy Church about his strange object that is on the shore of California near Malibu. Jimmy was one of the first to break that story. And then we'll be talking about hauntings and EVPs, so make sure you're part of that show. We're coming back in a moment with Walter Cruttenden, and we'll take final phone calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Walter Cruttenden with us. Walter, we have a surprise mystery guest for you.
Okay.
Who just likes what you do. Hello, mystery guest.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Jason Martell.
Hey, Jason. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Hey, Walter, and hey, George.
Jace, good to have you.
Both of you.
Good to have you, too. What do you think of this binary star system, Jason?
Well, you know, I really have to give my hats off to Walter. Anyone really following the whole Planet X or Nibiru topic needs to understand that this information does really affect that model greatly. I would like to make a couple of comments. One of the things, you know, that you touched on earlier is that this whole idea of the cycle is talked about by many cultures. As Walter mentioned, the Greeks called it different ages. The Hindus called it the Yugas. And the Mayans, for instance, called it different worlds. So as an example, 2012 and the world ending is a different light of understanding that a world of time or an age has passed just now as we're entering into the age of Aquarius. So one thing I wanted to at least ask Walter to comment on, and then I want to make one little final comment. But it's very interesting that if we look at how the sun affects us today, plants, for an example, literally grow towards the sun. everything springs to life when the sun is out. Summertime is always the best time of year. When the sun goes down, everything falls asleep and slows down. So my question to Walter to expand on after I hang up is, what happens when the two suns in our binary system are at their closest point and we have all this extra EM spectrum, all this extra energy or sunlight affecting us? What happens to us? My last comment is, you know, Walter mentioned something just before the commercial, and I think it's very important to mention to your audience. You know, we talk a lot on your show, George, about spiritual wellness and mental wellness, but just as important is financial wellness. And on the back burner, Walter and I have been developing a company for a couple of years that's now available, and it's Acorns, acorns.com. And I have to at least let your users know about that, because financial wellness is just as important as spiritual and mental wellness. And Walter has put in great efforts, not only in the binary research field, but also in his professional background, where he and I have crossed over and built this site called acorns.com. So I think that's important to mention. Users, check it out. But Walter, I'd love to hear your comments on how, when the binary orbits are at their closest point, the two suns together, how does that affect us? Love you guys. Have a great night.
You too, Jay. See you at one of the events. Go ahead, Walter.
Hey, thanks, Jason. It's a great point. You know, if you have a certain amount of energy that's interacting with the Earth's ionosphere, the Earth's magnetosphere, with when we're far away from the binary, you probably have a greater amount when we're closer to our companion. And so it probably has some effect that results indirectly in this higher age. There is a another element that comes into play there, and that is if you look at the Hindu writings on it, they say as we go around this binary system, our planet is moved closer to and farther from a third source, which is the actual emitter of sort of these good energies, if you will. And so I don't think we completely understand it, but I do think that when the two stars are closer to each other, that there's definitely a positive effect, and it happens here on Earth and results in a higher age.
Can you see the other star at all? I know it's burned out, which would make it dark, but I mean, do you see anything, an outline?
That's one hypothesis, and of course another hypothesis is that it is indeed Sirius, the brightest star in the sky, which would be, you know, you think about it, it's your most logical candidate. The only reason people don't give it a lot of credence is because presently it's 8.6 light years
away. Yeah, it's too far away at this point.
Yeah, but people have also found just recently that the solar system seems to be moving faster than we thought it was. So it's not unlikely that we could get around a center of mass with Sirius in 24,000 years if we're moving about 430 kilometers a second, which is the finding that George Cahill came up with at the University of Flinders down in Australia.
Well, let's go to Kevin in Mississippi. Welcome to the program, and good morning, Kev.
Good morning. Thanks for your call. I'm honored to take your first time caller to combine a whole lot of topics. We're all stardust, and our brains are affected by electricity. My cousin has Tourette's, for instance. Today's technology, he was one of the first five to get mapped in the brain and get like a pacemaker to regulate his Tourette's. And
wow.
Stephen Hawking, they're studying now to map the brains to control, you know, to be able to speak on computers. He can communicate by eye movements and stuff like that. But the Hopi Indians said we're in like the fifth cycle. It starts and stops in so many cycles, and ends. We can study anthills and see that we fight over resources. I mean, we're all humans. The human is error. And as far as we're all particles of elements, if we're affected by electromagnetism, as far as the solar system, if we have to be affected to tie everything together. I mean, look at, we predict our own future. Look at data off of Star Trek. Where are we going with all this technology? We're basically building our own gods, trying to live forever. What happens whenever, like 100 years in the future, whenever we get nanotechnology? What if we built superhumans? And I mean, we're predicting our own future, kind of.
And we're going to, Kevin. There's no doubt about that.
To tie everything together, like I said, if aliens are studying us, they have no farther to go than the anthill.
Walter, Stephen Hawking does not believe in God. What do you think of that?
You know, but Einstein did. As a matter of fact, Einstein said, I have no question that God exists. I just want to know how he did it. And so, you know, different people can have different points of view on different things, and it could be very well be definitional. You know, some people don't want to think of God as just a human, but some would think of him as, you know, more of a force, maybe the greatest force of nature there is.
Well, this sure is perplexing for modern science, isn't it?
It is, yes. And, you know, I think we're kind of running out of room for sort of the old model of modern science, you know, as you move from the dark ages to more enlightened ages, you know, you go through the Renaissance period, you just start to discover that things are more than just physical matter, that there's this whole electrical universe, there's this whole magnetic universe. You discover these finer forces. Things are made of molecules and atoms, and they're made of neutrons, protons, electrons, etc. And I think we're just at the beginning, George, of a much greater understanding, and maybe even it has some spiritual implications too.
Okay, let's go next to Mark in Los Angeles now. Hey, Mark, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Hey.
You know, you were talking about Stephen Hawking and God. Actually, his real comment was is he didn't want to talk about him at all. What I wanted to ask you or contemplate is Einstein was talking about relativity, speed, and time, how that all correlates. And we know that time can either be thought of as a growth or time can be thought of as decay. But one thing we do know is that time is a measurement of distance and speed. If we were to turn Einstein's theory backwards and instead of accelerating to the speed of light, and at his time he didn't know or even theorize that you could go past that, but go to absolute stop, what would that do to this? I got to think it would be like being inside of a car and then somebody being ripped out of it because they go to a point of stop while a car's still going 60. We don't really know how fast we're going through the universe. We use a dollar effect to look at other planets and see which way things are going. We have sophisticated equipment to hear the echoes of what we call the Big Bang. Do we know how fast we're physically going through the space that we're in? I mean, can you imagine if sunlight slowed down and backed up and that energy, instead of being so spaced apart, hit us at a more depth, a more strong ray? I just wonder if we're looking at his theories and should turn it around for a minute and look at it.
I love your mind. You got a great creative thought going on there. Of course, speed is relative. You know, when you measure the motion of anything, it's always compared to what. And we run into this problem when we're trying to measure the speed of the solar system. The way we got the speeds we need to determine if we can go around a star like Sirius is by measuring against the cosmic microwave background, the CMB, and because that seems to be sort of a stable, neutral point of view. But you're right. If you look at any other object out there, they're all moving too, so speed is relative.
Couple more calls here. Let's go to Lorianne in British Columbia, Canada. Lorianne, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was wondering if you could possibly give myself and other people some advice. There's so many people lost and like spiritually and no direction and lonely. Do you have any kind of advice?
Probably not in this show.
Hey, George, let me throw out that we are in an ascending age, according to, you know, this yuga theory, this cycle. So it's kind of been like, compared to the cycle of day and night, or the cycle of the year, that we're coming out of nighttime, or we're coming out of winter, and things have been very cold and confusing, and we haven't seen very well. But I believe we are coming into a higher age, and so I think it's a time for optimism.
Yeah, there is. And, Lori, you know, from time to time we have some people on who are extremely connected and spiritual. Make sure you're part of that show, because they're the ones that can give you some advice on that, even though you did pretty well there, Walter.
Okay.
Let's go to Bruce in Mississippi. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
Thank you for having me on, guys.
Sure thing.
I love your show. I got a couple of quick notes I made here. I know that we're running low on time. Appreciate you having me. But earlier you were speaking about the ancients and telepathy. Well, I truly believe that that...
Well, we lost you.
Oh, darn. He was going to a good place, too.
Yeah, try to call back. We've got a couple minutes to go. And that would be... I'd love to hear your question. So, Walter, what do you do next? I mean... are you out to convince people we're in a binary star system? What do you do?
I'll let the evidence convince them, George. And that's, again, why we're having this big conference coming up in a couple weeks at the Westin, the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge, where it's not just me making this case. It's a lot of other very good scientists. And we're looking at this whole idea from different points of view. And I think the... evidence is starting to become overwhelming. And so I'm just going to keep doing this work, keep writing books, keep making films on it, keep having conferences until it becomes obvious to all.
What major revelation will have to occur for a lot of people to understand and believe this?
I think it's going to come from a couple different areas. One certainly is astronomy, because it's all pointing to there's got to be this major object out there, because otherwise, these other orbits just couldn't exist. Something has to move them the way they are. And I think also, you know, sort of the old model of science is changing so quickly in so many areas. And you've had, you know, a lot of interesting guests on your show that talk about how things are changing in archaeology and linguistics. And I just think the whole body of work is going to make people wake up someday and say, oh, there's a bigger motion going on here, and it affects us all.
We have Bruce back in Mississippi. Hey, Bruce, go ahead again.
Sorry about that, guys.
That's all right.
What I was saying was, I think everyone's had a moment of clarity where they know what's going to happen in the next few minutes. I know I have, and I'm sure you have, and all of a sudden it happens, and you're like, wow, I knew that was going to happen. I think that's bred into all of us. I think that goes back to the ancients. I also look back, and I watch a lot of programs on this and see what they do, the accomplishments they made, and we still don't know how they do it. But you see people that are trained, and Masons, and they go and they look at what they've done, and they see actual tool marks on precision cuts where they say that this could only be done with power tools. And I go by the philosophy, crazy or not, that we were actually seated from somewhere else. Just as I think, when we have the capabilities to do it, if we had another planet that would support life and we could get there, I think we would attempt to seed that planet, and we would attempt to give them the knowledge that we have. But once we do, they're going to have to digress over a period of time before they can progress. They're going to get, so to speak, dumber before they can get smarter. And I do honestly believe that we were put here from someplace else. We have help getting started. They gave us a good jump. That's when we started recording history. They've backed off to see where we go. And I do think they check in on us from time to time.
Well, I got to tell you, Bruce, many of the things you just said are spot on. I mean, if you believe Zechariah Sitchin's theories that we were seated, I mean, all of those are there. Walter, we're almost out of time. Let me give you the final remarks. Go ahead.
George, it's been a pleasure being on the show. There's just a lot of evidence coming together lately that indicates there's something very big out there, and I believe it's going to be found to be another stellar mass that's causing a cycle. And when we understand that, we'll understand that history might be a little bit different than we thought it was.
And we're going through incredible planetary changes, Walter, aren't we?
We sure are.
All right, my friend. Be well. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks, George.
Walter Cruttenden, and his book is called Lost Star of Myth and Time. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.